Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 94, playoff edition.
Woo!
Week. You've got me, Alex, and Ben, who you heard going woo. How are you doing, Ben?
I was just emulating all those morons at Sharks games who woo.
Oh, when the Sharks are in the league. Don't be so mean, especially because, Ben, I don't know about you, but I've had to take several showers this week because there have been some filthy, filthy plays on both meetings there. The filthy good and the filthy
good. Hold on. I need to understand. Does that mean you don't normally take showers?
It means I do not normally take showers unless Tomáš Hertl or Donskoy or someone else is dangling, which really I now wish I hadn't said. We've got a lot to cover this week because we've got two playoff games and the game that we're not really going to talk a whole lot about, which would be the last game of the season against the Wild and the Sharks. But Ben, before we get into all of that playoff hoopla, I think we should probably bring up Vegas's first outing because they did something that I find very interesting because it made a lot of news. For those of you who didn't watch that game, and by the way, if you're just a Sharks fan, and especially if you're a newer Sharks fan, the rest of the playoffs are actually always worth it to watch. Doesn't matter whether you have a dog in that fight. Most of these teams are, you know, maybe not this round per se, but usually most of the teams are pretty freaking even, and those games can be a lot of fun. Vegas opened up their playoff performance with a pregame Shakespearean play involving a knight kicking the crap out of a king. Now, some people were surprised by this. I actually wasn't, because I always assumed that the first time that the knights and kings played, that the kings would pull some stupid stuff like that. But I gotta say,
and they may yet, right?
It's fun.
They just haven't had a home game.
That's right. That's right. That's right. You know, there's probably some guy right now who's like crumbling up a piece of paper going, ah, shit. Now I'm going to come up with something else.
No, he's not, because bad taste and the Kings, it's just, they go hand in hand. It's fine.
Yeah. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was goofy. I know a lot of people out there are like, but you know what? Have some freaking fun. Have some fun. Hockey can be fun, people. And sometimes that goofy stuff, like, for instance, the Laurel and Hardy relationship that is now Curtis Brown and Brody Brazil.
That sentence you just said makes no sense to any Sharks fan. Hockey can be fun.
Hockey can be fun. It can be painful, which we'll talk about this week, because I'm pretty sure both of you, both you and I probably had heart palpitations. But, you know, I just wanted to bring that up because someone's trying something unique and fun, and a lot of times the hockey community will kind of shit all over that.
Well, also trying some things that are not really unique, like coming out of their locker room through apparently a giant helmet that looks a lot like a shark mouth. So
yeah, well, you know, a lot of teams do that. The Predators do that too. But yes, the Sharks, I believe, were the originators. Don't quote me.
As far as I can tell from the outrage on the internet, the Sharks were the originator of come out through giant head thing. So
yes, we were the originators of pretty much everything, and don't let anyone ever tell you otherwise. Ben, why don't we hop right into the games, because I know you and I are going to talk a lot about the first two playoff games which occurred. Before we do...
Yeah, I was going to say, we should maybe talk about what was... Since we haven't had a chance, we didn't talk about our expectations going into the series.
People are going to just assume that we're making it up now, Ben. I'm just warning you.
Well, I can at least pretend. No, I actually...
You cannot care.
I don't care whether people think that or not. And I largely think I intend to talk more about like the consensus rather than my own expectations.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, okay. Do you want to set the stage by talking about that Wild game?
Yeah. Now that you cut off the transition into it, why not, Ben? The Sharks, for those of you who forgot, the Sharks were kind of limping into the playoffs. In every sense. Yes. They clinched on a loss. Their position was determined by a loss, and their last game of the season was a loss. That was coming out. You know, that was a pretty bad stretch coming off of an exceptional stretch. Sharks lost this game to the Wild, 6-3. Now, they went down about midway through the first, down two goals. Brent Burns scores one in the first. Joe Pavelski scores one. There were a lot of goals right there, by the way, in a quick succession. I think basically three goals in you know what, like a minute, 2 minute span. Sharks tie it back up. They get to the second, and the Wild pretty much run away with it until the late in the third, when Timo Meier decides to score a goal just to pretend. This was not the best game in the world. And for a team that had looked like it was really struggling towards those last couple of games of the season, not the most encouraging thing in the world. Martin Jones didn't have a particularly fantastic game. Not that those goals were all necessarily his fault. And it wasn't the most encouraging thing. Ben, take it away.
I mean, I think that, I don't know really what to say beyond that, except, you know, a combination of injuries and guys sort of not looking like they were fully back from injuries going into this game.
Right.
I think certainly made me feel anxious about the beginning of the playoffs. Also, you know, this loss to the Wild and, Anaheim's subsequent win rejuggled the playoff spots, compared to where they were when we podcasted the night before this game. So I think we assumed that the Sharks would finish up, and face the Kings. I don't think we expected that Anaheim would finish as strong as they did.
And worth pointing
out, which is, maybe unfair since they won something like 10 of their last 11 games or something like that.
Yeah. But we're also worth pointing out was, within that last week of games, the Sharks, who had pretty much held on to second place throughout the entire season, they were damn close to slipping into the wild card spot,
right,
and taking on Vegas in the first round.
Yep. And thank goodness that ended up being the Kings instead, because they also were not finishing up particularly hot.
Yeah.
Due to injuries and other things. So, that kind of, that outcome, this wild game that was hugely, I think disappointing for the fan base and the anxiety over who was going to really be healthy for this series, I think led most observers to put Anaheim as the team that would come out of this matchup. How did you feel about learning we were going to play Anaheim?
I don't love playing Anaheim. I know things don't necessarily carry over season to season between the players as much as, us fans and our narrative like to believe. But the Ducks, whenever the Ducks and the Sharks play each other, particularly in playoff mode, I feel like they just want to kill each other, and not just kill each other on the score. Like, those end up being extremely physical games. And my whole thing with the Sharks in general going into these playoffs was that they are kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team. When they are good, they are really freaking good. But they got to, show up for that. And there were games down that stretch where we literally saw both ends of that, right? In the open streak, they looked awesome. Then there were obviously some injuries and a couple of other things that were pushing them down. And I totally get that.
Right.
But then they also got really sloppy towards the end as well. And so...
So my perspective on that is a little bit maybe... adjacent to yours, but not identical, which is that this team looked fantastic when it was fully healthy after Vander Kane arrived.
Right.
And before that was largely a scrappy team and a resilient team that could pull out wins against equal talent and was overmatched by a Vegas, Nashville, the cream of the crop in the...
I don't even count those as bad. Those is bad games, because the Sharks played well for the most part, other than that second Vegas game. My expectation of the Sharks going into these playoffs was that they were very much in my mind a dark horse. And I don't mean that necessarily in a negative way. I mean that in a way that they're way under everyone's radar, especially in the press. They look like they can be lethal if they turn it on. We didn't know where Kane was going to be in the playoffs, although I had a lot of confidence in him, which is, has definitely panned out. But I felt like we could beat either Anaheim or LA. We could take it the distance and probably beat Vegas, and we would and we would have a good showing against Nashville. So either way, I think even if we were to get swept, I think I said this last podcast too. From my impression was, even if we got swept, let's say, by Vegas or swept by Nashville, that those games would feel relatively close. Here's where I got concerned, though, in playing the Ducks. For me, getting out of the Ducks series is all about getting out healthy. And the Ducks are kind of know, you know, I know I've been swearing about this podcast.
This is no different than
shitheads, but they're kind of shitheads, right?
But it's no different than facing the Kings.
It isn't, but they're, for some reason, I always feel like the entire Ducks roster is just so hard playing the body. Whereas I'm not saying I don't feel the way about the Kings, but I feel like that's isolated more towards like Brown and maybe Kopitar. Like, it's not the whole roster that is just coming in like a bunch of cannonballs bouncing off the walls.
I mean, I still think you can point at two or three players even on the Ducks who are the wrecking balls in the same way you can do on the Kings. Right? It's Kessler, it's Perry.
For sure, yeah.
To a lesser extent, Baldy McBalderson.
Yeah.
And we only have to go back, you know, 4 or 5 years to see the Sharks have players taken out of series against the Kings by dirty hits, right?
Right.
It was what we were afraid about in the first round in 2015, 2016, is what would the health of the team be because of guys like Dustin Brown. I don't think it's that different facing the Ducks personally. Neither team is particularly fast. Neither team is particularly skilled in the bottom six.
Right.
Neither team is particularly healthy on defense.
Sure.
And so my perspective, you know, going into the playoffs here was, could the Sharks, when the Sharks were at their best towards the end of this season, it was after the acquisition of Evander Kane and when DeBoer had finally put some guys who actually have skill on the fourth line.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
So for me, if Kane's healthy, if that fourth line is healthy enough, it's got not Ward on it, then this team could easily match up against the Ducks or the Kings and probably can beat Vegas, right? That's how I felt the whole way. So when I thought I was approaching what's the Ducks series going to be like, it was, we don't know what the health of any of these guys is, right? And in fact, the Sharks muddied the waters in game one by putting Thornton and Goodrow on the ice in pregame.
Right.
Like, just to, I don't even think that was to screw with Anaheim.
No,
I think that was to mess with us. Not us as in Circling the Cup podcast. I mean, us as in the Sharks fan base.
Yeah, maybe it was to wet Dumbo's appetite. You know what I mean? Like to get, not that guy needs to be pumped up or anything, but to go, hey man, carrot stick, feel that atmosphere. Although the weird thing about that to me, because I read that justification, and initially I had that same thought until I realized that it was in Anaheim.
Like, right.
If you're going to trot him out at, you know, in San Jose, sure, the crowd would have gone absolutely apeshit.
Yeah.
But
I don't get the point. I don't really understand either putting Goodrow or Jumbo on the ice down in Anaheim. Is it till it be like, hey, just you wait, we're getting healthier.
Yeah.
These guys are coming. Or, I mean, like, who cares? Play the game.
Yeah.
Right? And so what I was relieved about, semi-relieved about anyway, heading into game one is it looked like at least one of the two players I didn't think should be on the ice was not going to be on the ice, and that the forward lineup was going to be as optimal as it could be without Goodrow and Jumbo being healthy.
Right.
Which is to say that Joel Ward is not playing because he is too slow for this series. On the defensive side, I was disappointed to see that DeBoer was going to stick with Paul Martin, because I still think, and we saw a real horrendous mistake by Martin in game one, that should have ended up back in the Sharks net and did not, thank goodness, go Joner, that this team would be better off playing the way it did all year with Joakim Ryan next to Burns, just because of, you know, difference in foot speed and his ability to then, you know, improvise when Burns does something dumb.
Right.
That said, you know, besides that huge should have ended up in the back of the net mistake in game one, I will say that I think Martin has played pretty solidly, and he's doing some stuff that we don't expect to see from Martin, which we'll talk about when we talk about the games.
Yeah.
So I did feel like at least going into this, the Sharks were putting almost an ideal lineup on the ice compared to the Ducks. And of course the Ducks are missing probably their best defenseman, and he won't be back for this series. He's out 2 to 6 weeks. And so, you know, as I looked at the series, I had no problem thinking about the Sharks as potentially winning this series. I think most people in the sort of media and blogosphere said this would be a 7-game series, and they tilted it one way or the other depending on how they felt about goaltending mostly. And I think most teams gave Gibson the advantage there, which I can't argue with.
Keep in mind, Gibson was also, you know, dealing with
dinged up
stuff towards the end of the season. So that's pretty impressive that people were kind of putting there.
Well, I mean, if you look at their body of work this year, I don't think you would necessarily give Jones the nod.
Right.
Because Jones hasn't been fully healthy this year. He hasn't been.
No. And Jones on and off has looked good or not good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Again, obviously, I think a fair amount of that is due to the injury status, which, you know, he was obviously injured a lot longer than the Sharks were clear about.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I didn't really ever sit down and think about like where I thought this series would go. I'll be honest. I think in my head, if you had pushed me to make a call, I would have said it's going to go to 7. I think I would have agreed with the consensus and would have depended on injuries. And would have depended on injuries created in the series as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's kind of where my fear of the Ducks stems.
Right. Yep. And so I basically, for me, the series was a coin flip, mainly because is Kane really healthy?
Right.
Right. They got an extra few days off before the playoffs started. So you hope that guys get healthier. Would Gaudreau come back? Is Carlson healthy? Because he hasn't looked great most of the year.
Yeah.
And questions on and on like that.
Yeah.
So what did you think?
In terms of...
What would your prediction have been?
My prediction would have been the Sharks either way. I thought... I've been fairly confident that between the Ducks and the Kings, that the Sharks... That was going to be a winnable series for us unless, you know, injuries during the season were to knock it out. And you can't really predict that, right? From there, you know, like I said before, I've kind of been looking at them as a dark horse team. So I do believe that healthy, we can go the distance against Vegas again, healthy. And I do believe that we can, you know, I do think Nashville is the better team, but I do think that we can surprise or, you know, do some damage, to Nashville. So I've never really been super worried about getting out of the first round. Now, that's not to say that like I would have necessarily been heartbroken had we not, or shocked if we hadn't, because for me, you know, like I've been saying all season, this has been about figuring out where I think the identity of this team is and what I think this offseason is going to need to look like to get them into a state where they are, you know, a cup team again. And I think, you know, I wouldn't have put a number of games. I never thought the series was going to be a 7-game series. I still don't.
No, it's, I certainly hope not now.
Right, yeah, right. I usually, for safety's sake, when I'm making any sort of serious prediction, I usually say 5 to 6 games. I almost never call a sweep, and I almost never, very rarely do I go 7. So I would have fallen in there, and I'm still, you know, pretty confident that the Sharks are going to get through this. But again, for me, having kind of, you know, expected, barring a complete meltdown, which would have been possible, that the Sharks would do that. I am really laser focused on, you know, injuries and where and how Thornton will eventually fit into what we're seeing now. Because that is a big question. You were talking about a guy who missed most of the season. You know, he had a surgery in his other knee in the offseason. His skill set, you know, as you talked about last week, Ben, very much, while to the untrained eye, it looks like it's just stick handling and passing for the most part, is reliant upon him being able to make space and get open.
Right.
You're also talking about sliding it into what right now looks like a pretty fast, I would argue, playoff team, speed concern, especially with the young guys stepping up.
Right.
And a team that I think has kind of rallied around without him a little bit, which is, by the way, I don't mean that as a knock. That's very encouraging, because at some point Jumbo is not going to be on this team. And I will say that I think that's one of the things that I found the most encouraging throughout this series is that is that a lot of my feelings or suspicions in the regular season about some of these guys being ready to step up has, I think, been confirmed. And I think when I look at it, we can talk about this at the end of the podcast. I don't think the Sharks are maybe, I don't think the Sharks window is as closed as a lot of pundits seem to think that it is, again, barring on a couple of smart moves in the offseason.
Well, so, you know,
it's a lot to unpack for you, Ben.
Boy, there's a lot to it. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot to unpack there. You look, ultimately, the Sharks' playoff success is going to come down to matching up against the teams that they're facing, in the sense that you need to have a real top nine, really, not a top six and a bottom six,
right?
To succeed against the best players, the other best teams in this conference, and to get to the Stanley Cup. Now, the Kane acquisition created a situation in which not only is the Sharks' top line actually really good again, and not just kind of like held together by baling wire and tape. But that cascades down the lineup when you're healthy, right? So if your top line can match up against their top line, then your second line can match up against their second line. And what you're hoping is you now create, you know, mismatches in the bottom six, that your third and fourth lines dominate their third and fourth lines, right?
Right.
And that's, you know, spoiler alert, that's exactly what we have seen be the key to success in the Anaheim series so far. And also is what carried the Sharks through the Western Conference in 2015-2016, right? In fact, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot over the last couple of days when we talk about games one and two of this series. It's been a series in which Anaheim, because they don't have the speed or the skill to match what the Sharks are bringing to the table, which is so weird to say, right, with a team that has lost Jumbo and Marlowe.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately lost them. That they're trying to body the Sharks into submission.
Right.
This is exactly what we saw in 2015-2016. First from the Kings, then from Nashville, then from St. Louis.
Yeah.
And the Sharks did not back down. And right, so far they haven't here too. It's a question of, can you weather that and not take major injuries? You know, and I want to get to a question that is in chat about the hits the Sharks have taken. Sure. At some point, since we haven't talked about the games yet, but your question of what happens when Jumbo comes back, to me, is, yes, I become a little bit concerned about speed, but not, I don't think as much as you do, because again, what a return of Jumbo allows the Sharks to do is cascade talent down the lineup.
Right.
Right. Now Donskoy is with Hurdle and Couture, and that line is now even better than it is at the moment because Bodker's not on it. And then yeah, Bodker or Meyer cascade further down. Right. And, you know, Sorensen has been fucking great, you know, playing in place of Goodrow, at least in the first two games of this series.
Sure.
But I'm not going to weep if he ends up on the bench because now wrecking ball Timo Meyer is on that fourth line with Fair. I mean, I think legitimately you could say the Sharks would have four real scoring lines in that situation, right? With Bodker on the third, and because Bodker's been at his best, let's be honest, this year with Tierney dragging his corpse up and down the ice, right? I don't think Bodker's been particularly good with Hurdle and Couture, and they've held serve in this series, if that makes sense, right? So I, for one, you know, especially as we get deeper into the playoffs, I, for one, welcome our Jumbo Overlord and his return. I just don't want him to come back yet/ too soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if he comes back too early, then he is an anchor.
Right.
And so I actually, you know, I think the upsides about the Sharks taking the first two games in the series is it pushes off a need or Jumbo's drive to be like, I can be the solution. I will come back and solve everything. Cause you know, that's what it's in his head, right? You know, that Jumbo is sitting there like dying to get back on the ice. And that's what PDB is having to manage.
Right.
Is can he, cause we've seen Jumbo come back from injury too soon last year in the playoffs, right? Because that team was overmatched.
Yeah, I know he's been pushing, obviously, to come back because we've heard him, you know, working out, and that's just his personality. I also wonder, he's in a very interesting position career wise because, right, you know, he signed a 1-year contract.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that there aren't GMs out there that will sign him in the offseason, even if he doesn't play. But that's obviously going to greatly impact term and cost. So, you know, I'm very curious as to whether some of his motivation. I definitely believe that Thornton is a team first type of player. I don't necessarily think, he's one of those
totally
guys that's just a contract. But at the same time, in the same way that for Kane, there are a couple of players on this team right now where they're auditioning either for new contracts with us or lucrative contracts elsewhere. And if Jumbo comes in and can prove that he's going to have a limited amount of time to prove that he can, still keep up and that these knee injuries haven't been catastrophic to his game, that's going to make a big difference for him contract wise. So I would be very interested to kind of just get in his head for a second and see whether or not that's even a blip or whether that's driving any motivation.
I mean, who knows? I don't think we even can begin to speculate. And there's all that fantasy talk in the Sharks community that we're going to suddenly end up re-signing Kane and get John Tavares and suddenly be, the Western Conference superpower.
Cap's going up, baby.
There are so many factors that play into that that it's just not even worth worrying about it. I mean, again, if I'm Doug, if I got to be in Doug's shoes, my number one priority right now, whatever Jumbo is going to do, and I do think he's going to come back. I think Jumbo will want to be here if Kane resigns, is to resign Kane. I would have a contract in Kane's hands right now because his, Kane, again, spoiler alert, because we're going to talk about this in a moment when we talk about the game, he's already got two playoff goals, and the Sharks are going to probably advance, and he's going to get more goals. And every goal he scores is going to make him more attractive to other teams that either are a playoff team this year that ends up out early or a bubble team like Dallas. So, again, I mean, if I could have been in Doug's shoes, I would have had a contract in Kane's hands immediately, not in the playoffs like weeks ago, but for whatever reason, they're not.
Well, and Kane and his agent have also said that, that they're not looking towards signings until the offseason supposedly either. And who knows whether that's smoke or not. I will point out, we will talk about this in the game. I know we're foreshadowing a lot, probably ought to just jump in and let things spiral out of there. but the thing that I've really appreciated out of Kane is, in both of these games is even when he's not on the score sheet, he's making plays happen.
Yep.
Excellent plays, excellent passes, excellent hockey IQ. And, for me, even if he were to go through these playoffs and, not somehow score, I still would think that he would be worth re-signing for what he's brought to the team.
Agree.
And continue to bring to the team alone.
I've been watching, him a lot on the defensive side of things. He's really defensively responsible.
Oh, he's smart, man.
And I did not expect that from, what I'd observed of him on Buffalo and, of his reputation.
Yeah.
He's a complete guy, a complete player right now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's exactly what the Sharks need.
And he's young. People forget
he's 26. Speaking of that, he and basically Skinner are the two players who had never gotten to play in the playoffs over like 500 plus games of their career. It's like he's hungry. This team is one that needs him. It's a team that he can have success with in the long term. To me, if his agent is seriously hoping to just create a bidding war and then end up shipping that guy somewhere where he's not going to have long-term success again, he's doing Kane a disservice. This is a perfect opportunity for that guy, and they really should have that in their heads. I'm not trying to look, if you're listening, Evander Kane's agent, stop being a dumbass. Get your guy to sign here. It's a great situation, and it's only getting better. To your point, the young core has arrived here.
Yeah.
Right? LeBanc, Tierney, and Meyer all overachieved this year versus what we expected of them.
Yeah.
At their age, with what we can expect from the way guys in the NHL age and get greater responsibility as they get into the age 24, 25, 26 season, we can reasonably expect Tierney to and LeBanc both to be 55 to 60 point players next year, right? Full contributors, probably on power play, both of them. I mean, LeBanc's gotten to be that most of this year as is. I mean, Meyer brought his assist totals up by the end of the year. He's at 38 points at 21. Those guys have variable success after because he does he's still developing, right? And he's relying a lot on his size and skill and speed, what have you. But like, that's incredibly encouraging.
Can I point something out?
Yeah.
That you haven't pointed out. And I know that, you know, for some people this might not be a factor, but it is, and because it's real life. This team obviously really wants him. The players seem to really get along with him.
Yes.
The press here is very much under the radar, so he's not going to be under a microscope. Yep. And to put it bluntly, while it is extremely expensive here, and I get that, and that's why we have to often overpay, it's a diverse area. And I'm not, you know, I've been to Buffalo. I love Buffalo, and I've been to Winnipeg, and I don't love Winnipeg. But, you know, this is a player who, to your points in previous podcasts, and I read an article about his take on, you know, his situation in race, which is a great read. I wish I remembered where the link was. I would forward it out on the Facebook page. In fact, I'll see if I can find it and send it out. You're not going to be dealing with that, at least not to the same, certainly not to the same degree. So this is in every way a pretty cushy scenario, and probably a best case scenario.
I mean, there are other U.S. markets, I think, that have the same thing. And that's why a team like Dallas worries me, right? Yeah. A team with cap space and, you know, solid leadership and some upside, but the Sharks are better positioned.
You're right.
Than Dallas is. They just lost their coach. You know, they haven't been as that great about their free agent signings, etc. Their goalie play was god awful 2 years ago, and on and on and on. Right.
Right.
The Sharks are set in goal. They're set on defense. They're set on leadership. I mean, Pavelski had a great second half to kind of rebound to the point where, you know, maybe we don't have to worry about a decline there yet, like we were worrying about earlier in the season. And Pavelski is a kind of leader who will protect Kane from the worst, you know, of, you know, the media or what have you here, such as it is.
And good luck getting an interview out of Couture.
Yeah.
That guy's not going to say anything.
Right. So, you know, all that said, like, it's the right place for the expectations for Kane. It's the right place for him to, you know, have what he needs in terms of support structures. And it's the right place in terms of where this team is headed in the future talent wise.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a couple older guys who are going to eventually go on decline, but you know, this team has done an amazing job, not necessarily because of picking in, you know, the first round. And I'm going to say again, those people who think the Sharks are terrible at picking in the first round are picks in the back half. They are lottery tickets. They are basically second rounders. Knock it off. You know, and there were better players available perhaps than Meyer.
Yeah.
But Meyer fits what Doug wanted to have on this team. And honestly, like a guy like Meyer flying around being physical, we can see is something the Sharks needed more of because Kane has provided so much of that too.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not against, you know, physical play, you know, as you may think of me because I'm the analytics guy on this podcast. I'm against guys who are inserted into the lineup purely for physical play and don't bring anything else.
Right.
Right.
Which I think we saw a little bit of in one of these games.
Okay. Do you want to transition to the game?
We're going to hop into these and apologies. We're going to be floating back and forth between these two, but we'll pretend like we're going to do them one at a time. Sharks open up this series against Anaheim, as Ben mentioned.
On the road.
Jumbo did a little pre-game skate. Also, we saw the return of Jamie Baker. I can't recall if we saw him before, which was awesome.
No, he came back for like a couple games, and then, you know, the team announced that there were issues. And and he's not broadcasting, right? He's kind of appearing pre-game and post-game.
Yeah.
In mid-game.
I was like, I guess, but it's awesome.
It's good to see Baker back. That said, I've really enjoyed Hedekin.
Yep.
You know, as kind of the color guy. So
I'm not surprised that you would feel that way, man. At
he's
all.
Less cheerleady.
100%. 100%. The Sharks, surprise. Ooh, they win this one. They shut out the Ducks 3-0. And I'll tell you what, they could have had a lot more goals than that. It was a pretty tight first period between these two teams. Second period is when the Sharks really start to pull away. So Evander Kane scores an awesome goal. that he was just in position for it. I don't even know how to say it otherwise.
Well, that was on the power play.
phenomenal passing.
The PK, that was a mistake by the PK. They left him wide open in the middle. Everybody went below the goal line. And
can't
the
do
Sharks,
that.
Sharks capitalized. Hey, yeah, you can't do that. Guess what we're going to see in game two.
Exactly. And then Evander Kane scores again because that guy really was looking for a hat trick. I feel like he wanted to make a statement and he most certainly did.
And the team tried to feed it to him, which I think.
Yes. But I got to say something, Ben. I know you haven't been necessarily following the team as long as Colin and I have.
I have not.
I don't want to say every instance of his game reminds me of this player.
But oh my God. Found, are you going to say Owen Nolan?
Thing I found refreshing about Kane in this game in particular is that this was a guy with a physical presence who is extremely aggressive, who had a good shot, who has great skill. I think Kane in general is and will be a better player than Owen Nolan. However, the Sharks in the playoffs, we've had a lot of guys who have a lot of great skill. No doubt about it. Marlowe has skill. Thornton has skill. Pavelski's been excellent. Guys like Chichu have stepped up when we've needed.
Bear in mind, Logan Couture led the entire playoffs.
I totally understand.
Yeah.
And Couture would probably be the closest thing I think I've felt since then. But Kane is a guy who I feel like if the game gets out of hand, he's going to be like, no. And I'll tell you what, there was a point in game two, and it was a real minor point, and nothing actually occurred of it, where Kane goes into the offensive zone by himself. Sharks are in a line change, and the guy pretty much gets not recorded shots because one of them wasn't quite on net, but two shots off and almost a third shot. And it's basically him and the Ducks, you know, team in that zone. So I was really encouraged by this. I thought it was an amazing showing by him for his first playoff game. And I was so super happy, not just for us, but for him.
I was happy for him too. I mean, to spend that long on bad teams that had no playoff hopes, to not make the playoffs and to finally get an opportunity again, why he's such a great fit here and why this is such a great fit for him. He is the focal point of the Sharks offense on that top line, right? Because he's paired with Pavelski and Donskoy, who are pass first guys. Let's be honest.
Right? Yeah.
At least Pavelski is having to play that role right now. He isn't when Jumbo's with him, but he's a pass first guy right now. He's been great at it too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that'll still more or less stay the same if Jumbo comes back, right? It's going to be Pavelski and Kane both getting the benefit to be distributed to there. And you know, for him to get two goals in his first playoff appearance I was happy for the dude. I mean,
oh man, look at all the articles that appeared about it immediately.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of them was conclusively saying, well, it looks like Kane is a playoff player after all.
And well, I mean, he should be.
Yeah, he absolutely should be.
He's built for the playoffs. He's big, he's strong, he's physical, he's got a great shot.
Shouldn't have been a question in the first place.
No,
but, you
it
know,
shouldn't
unfortunately,
have been.
It for some people apparently it was, or they needed clicks. Either way.
Historically, it's been good business to question whether a Sharks player is going to be a playoffs player. Let's be honest.
Right? True.
Whether it's actually true or not. I mean, even Patrick Marleau still carries that.
It's a lot of people's favorite pastime.
Yeah. I mean, even Marleau still carries that reputation of not being a playoff player, despite, you know, scoring prodigiously in the playoffs, just never having, except for 1 year, been on a team that came together around him. Jumbo too, you know,
right.
Because they don't score the same way they did at the, you know, in the regular season. Hey, spoiler alert, when you're in the playoffs, you don't get to feast on bad teams anymore.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, totally true.
Anyway, the other thing I really liked about this game wasn't just Kane. The other thing I wanted to note here.
Well, hold on.
Is,
there's one more goal.
There is. All right, fine. Go ahead. Then I'll talk about what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, because I know burns. I can already sense where you're going.
No, you can't. You have no idea.
Well, you already spoiled who scored the third goal.
Oh then. No. What have
it
I done?
Was, it was Brent Burns. All right, back to you.
I was just going to say that, you know, there were a couple of players who were really, really great in this game.
Absolutely.
Who didn't score goals.
Absolutely.
Tomas Hertl was fantastic in this game. Timo Meier was all over the place and was fantastic in this game.
Great. Tierney.
Tierney was really good. Dylan was great. DeMelo didn't get to play very much, and I thought that was a mistake, and he played a little bit more in game two, and he looked great too. I'll talk about that. But what I liked about this is both Hertl and Meier ended up on the scoreboard with assists.
Right.
And it's Meyer kind of batting that puck back to Burns, where he just kind of swatted it out of midair off a bounce and into the net that sealed that third goal. Right. So I was just happy to see that Hurdle and Meyer, you know, ended up with assists in this game because they earned it. I mean, they were fantastic.
Right.
That's all I wanted to say.
That was the end of your statement. What I loved about this game is I felt like the Sharks defense played really well, which is an area where I felt towards the end of the season.
With some key mistakes a couple times, I agree.
Oh, yes, but for the most part, especially compared to really the latter half of the season where they could kind of be all over the place and were pulled out of position, I thought they looked quite good.
You know, Alex, that's because Paul Martin brings a veteran presence to the team that Joachim Ryan just doesn't.
Boy, are you going to be talking about that for game two, Ben. I can already tell.
No, I've said my piece. Look, I'll say it again. I'm going to keep saying it. Joachim Ryan should be playing. He earned it. Martin's a step slower. It's just the way things are. But that's not how DeBoer does things. And Martin has been, besides a couple of ugly mistakes, he's been not just serviceable. He's been activating in the offensive zone in a way I don't think we ever saw him do. And you said this when we chatted about it offline, it feels like he's trying to provide what the team would expect Ryan to provide.
Right.
You know, more so than just being the, you know, the get Burns out of a dumb mistake free card that he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's been a bad thing. I think Martin's been all over the ice in a way that, you know, certainly we don't expect a guy that slow to be. I think it's cost him in the defensive zone a little bit. This need to activate in the offensive zone. It hasn't cost the Sharks up to this point. It should have in game one, but it didn't. And the other thing I want to say about this game, in talking about players, is this first game showed kind of that depth difference between the Ducks and the Sharks in the forward side of things and on the defensive side. I mean, you know, the injury to Cam Fowler has forced the Ducks to play some guys you've never heard of on defense. And some really slow guys also on defense. And Beauchemin has had guys just walk around him with the puck multiple times. They brought Bieksa into game two, and he was god-awful.
Right.
But, you know, because they're trying to grind the Sharks into a fine paste.
Yeah.
And
physicality, again, that was my concern going in here. I mean, this team comes out hitting, and it's not always the cleanest. I thought one of the interesting things about this game was, boy, their leadership, huh?
Yeah,
those
guys
seemingly having issues with you know, leading without taking penalties.
Well, the story of game one was the power play or the penalty disparity, right? As DeBoer said after the game, I thought they took six penalties and they deserved every one of them.
Yeah.
and he was just, you know, he left out the seventh penalty at the end of the game that didn't matter, the offsetting penalties, when he said that. Right. It's totally true. I thought game one was refereed really well.
I did too.
I thought it was, and not just because the Sharks ended up in the advantage, it's because the Sharks played a cleaner game. That's what they do. The Sharks draw penalties, they force mistakes, and they hope that their power play will show up.
Yeah.
It's been the way they always work. And particularly, you know, when you talk about that talent disparity on the bottom six, that's their job.
Right.
Right? Their job is to exploit that disparity to draw penalties, right? To use speed and spoiler alert, we'll see this in game two with Marcus Sorensen more than once. But you know, what we often see in the NHL, and this is actually proved, there's a guy who did a study on this, and I've shared this study on my timeline at some point. The NHL refs in general don't actually call the games as they happen. They call the games even. Right. Mm-hmm. So you tend to end up with whichever team is taking liberties, they end up taking about the same number of penalties in most games as the other team, regardless. Like, it's very common that you'll see, you know, one team get a penalty and the next penalty called will be against the other team. Right. Because the refs aren't, again, they're not calling the game as it is. They're calling a game in a way that they kind of want to keep things close because it's exciting, I guess. Right?
Right.
Game one didn't conform to that. And I think that was great. I think that it was fair, not fair as in our center, but fair.
Clever, Ben. Clever. Speaking of someone who's also playing well.
Exactly. Well, again, like that contributing to that talent disparity. I mean, our third line and fourth line, you know, the Tierney, LeBanc, Meyer, they were the best line on the ice in game one, possession wise. The second best Sharks line on the ice was our fourth line, possession wise, Fair, Sorensen, and Carlson. You know, the fourth line didn't play a ton of minutes, but the minutes they played were important.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, Fair coming back and being healthy for this series, shockingly, is it was a huge key.
Yeah. You know who I felt had a good game on the other team and I think deserves some recognition, and he certainly deserves recognition in the second game, is Gibson, who's a guy who has been, you know, went into the playoffs injured.
Yep.
And you know, there were a lot of people questioning whether he should start, whether Miller should start. And I got to say, you know, this game, even though the final score was 3-0, Sharks had a lot of excellent opportunities, and yep. Gibson made a lot of excellent saves. Yep. And
vice versa, by the way, too.
Totally. Oh, absolutely.
Jones had a great game in game one.
Absolutely. So far, both these goaltenders, I think, have been pretty phenomenal across the series. And that's what's really kept these games, I think, maybe a lot closer in some respects than they could have been on both sides of the ice. So, you know, I think the calling off of the podcast was sort of, you know, wondering because of the shutout and everything, you know, whether or not, you know, it would make sense to bring in Miller at any point in time. And for me right now, the answer is
no,
not really. Gibson's not doing anything wrong. In fact, he's doing pretty much everything right.
I think, and I'm going to speak for Colin here. I think, you know, Colin was not the only person who speculated on this. Like,
of course,
if you watched game one, the Sharks largely just dominated the game.
Yeah.
Right. The dirty hits were all on the one side. They were penalized. So the Sharks basically got to play their game and just feast. Hence 3-0 and strong goalie play on both sides. Right. So how do you answer that? Right. If you're Anaheim and you're not getting Cam Fowler back and you're not getting some, you know, magical infusion of talent on your third and fourth lines as a coach, what are your options? Right. And Randy Carlyle is not a great coach. So you would expect him to do something potentially crazy. You could expect him to do that.
Yeah.
So what's left? Well, you know, Gibson's not healthy. So maybe Miller's the answer. I think that was Colin's perspective. And I don't think Colin's alone in that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I agree with you, though.
Yeah.
That it wasn't time yet.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. In fact, my philosophy has always been goaltending tandems in the playoff. Not like you don't want to be having to make decisions back and forth across your goaltenders. You want to have a goaltender where you're like, this is it. Cool. If he goes down injured, you obviously want to have a capable backup like we did with Reimer or, you know, like we have with Dell. But you don't want to be sitting there swapping goalies every other game.
Exactly. And Miller's not the solution to the problem here. He's not the actual solution, right? What Colin is talking about and what people are thinking about when you get the Miller substitution is, oh, it's inspiring. Miller comes in, he stands on his head, and Anaheim somehow just
I think it's the opposite.
Turns things on. Well, no, I think that's I don't know whether it's inspiring or not, but it's one of those things where a coach can say, you know, I pulled a lever. I tried something.
Yeah, totally. But in my mind, as a player who's now once again playing, although obviously not the NHL playoff or even NHL or even juniors or anywhere near beer league level, you know, if my starting goalie, the guy who's declared kind of the starter going in, gets pulled after the first game,
right?
I don't take it personally necessarily, but I don't there's no way I view that as a positive. Like, I just don't, unless I know that there's some injury that he can't play through.
Agreed. No, and Miller's not the answer. I mean, Miller is an old goalie, right? I mean, the chance that the Sharks will, you know, feast on Miller is way higher than they do than that they feast on a slightly injured Gibson, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You want to move on to game two?
Yeah, let's talk about game two.
All right, because there's two games, people. The Sharks also win this one. I know we're up 2-0. This game, Ben and I were both texting each other about the heart attacks that we were suffering throughout the entire game. The Ducks score really early on a goal by Silverberg, which, by the way, was not a great goal. First shot of the game as well. Just goes in. And that was when I had a moment of,
oh no,
Jones. what's going on? I'm glad you did too. this first period, I want to go into detail about this because there's a lot of stuff happening here. First of all, there were almost no. I can't even remember if there was a call in the first period. Oh yeah, there
was in the. It went to the Sharks' benefit.
Yeah. This, but there were so few, and there were a lot of really, really badly missed ones.
Yep.
When I've never seen this before, but when Hurdle took a puck to the chin, he was being held on the ice.
Yep.
Which is ridiculous. That's a player who's took a puck to the mouth. He was trying to get off the ice. I think it was by Getzlaff, right? You had Kane taking a I can't remember if it was a stick or a shoulder. What you had? What has to be one of the most
egregious
charging calls ever?
Well, I wasn't even gonna go with that one. I was gonna talk about the motion man interfered with Meyer going into the zone. Just
Called
him down. Also hit him in the face.
Yeah, I mean, and you could tell that the Ducks were obviously trying to make a statement here, and they were kind of headhunting. And the Sharks.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of the Sharks because they were pretty disciplined, although they were yelling at the ref, and we got a lot of FU lip reading going on, which was great.
Well, LeBanc, I mean, did you say
that's,
young LeBanc?
That's the one that I was going to
talk about. Off. I mean, look, okay, so this happens every goddamn year in the playoffs where, you know, a team is allowed to just run around up until the point they basically kill somebody, right? And then maybe a penalty is called. You know, and, you know, we know that what would happen is if the refs actually did their job and penalized a couple of guys early for that sort of crap, it would lead to a cleaner, less dangerous game.
Yeah.
Right? That's their job. I don't know what this ref crew was doing. I don't know what their thought process was. I don't know what they had been told to do, especially since game one was so well refereed.
Yeah.
But it they're responsible. The referees are responsible for that hit that Perry laid in third period on Carlson. That was clear interference, probably charging, should be suspendable, because he was not going for the puck. He just was going to go kill a guy. I mean, you know, and he only got 2 minutes for it. So like that play is a 5 minute major. If you have held the, you know, the standard earlier, if you don't let I don't remember which guy it was who basically pushed Braun's face into the boards.
That was absolutely,
but that should have been penalized. Absolutely
ridiculous.
That was at the very least an elbowing.
That was like headboarding.
Yeah and I don't get it. Like, this again goes back to, what do you want the NHL to be?
You know,
are those hits supposed to be legislated out of the game or not? And by the way, I want to take a moment to talk about the hits in other games that have kind of led to where we are.
Sure.
Because I do feel like, at least on the player safety side of things, there has been an effort to punish these plays, right?
Right.
We saw in the first Vegas and LA Kings game. So Vegas spent the entire game absolutely punishing Drew Doughty, and nothing makes me happier than watching Drew Doughty get just fucking crunched. Because that guy is the whiniest, shittiest Norris candidate you'll ever meet. And I take joy in it. And so, of course, in the third period of that game, one of the guys who's been just bodying him all game, you know, kind of takes the puck, heads towards the middle of the ice, and Doughty just shoulders his head.
Right.
Intentional or not, he went into that hit knowing that he was going to potentially make head contact, and he didn't care.
Right.
And in past, I don't think that would have been suspended because Doughty's a star, because you can make an argument that Carrier put his head down, and on and on and on, right?
Right.
And for once, the player safety was like, no, that's a game.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Then in the Montreal and Bruins game, so Kadri had been flying around all game. He arguably boarded Wingles earlier in that game, put him, you know, into the boards from about 2 feet away. And I think he got a 2 minute minor for that. And later in that game, Wingles, you know, elbowed a dude. I think it was Nylander, but it might've been Marner. And Kadri comes flying across the ice and Burns style, you know, butt heads Wingles' face into the boards.
Right.
And in the past, he was thrown out of the game, rightfully, right? He got a 5 minute major and a game misconduct. I think in the past, Kadri would have gotten away with at most a game. You know, anybody not named Rafi Torres doesn't get the death penalty there. They gave Kadri 3 games.
Yeah.
And I've been well earned. You know what? As we go through that, I'm like, yes, this is the NHL finally doing what they were supposed to do to legislate these games, these hits out of the game. What does Doty do when he's asked about this hit? He says, no, this was a terrible call. It's BS. And I would make that hit again. Just to show you, like, you know, there are individual whiny ass NHL players who don't get it, right? If that hit had happened to a King, you know, Doty would have been like, we've got to get that kind of hit out of the game.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So that all leads us to if Perry is not disciplined for that hit on Carlson, then the NHL is doing something wrong. They're not being consistent.
Well, and you know how you knew that was going to be the tempo for the Sharks game? Because Bieksa was put on the ice.
Yes, exactly.
And
right.
That's literally all he's going to do. And by the way, I'm glad he was because the Sharks exposed him.
Yeah, just like they had Beauchemin, just like they had that AHL pair that the Ducks had. And can I take another step back here? What's kind of amazing about this is the Ducks, a year ago, had probably the best top six outside of Nashville or defenders, right?
Right.
Vatanen, Theodore, plus some of the guys they've got now. I mean, that decor is amazing. They're not in this position. And then they gave up Theodore in the expansion draft. When they probably could have given up somebody else. And then they traded Vatanen for a guy who is being outplayed by Chris Tierney now.
Right.
So we're kind of fortunate, I think, to be matching up against this Ducks team the way it is currently constructed in that sense. Because if they still had that, you know, that D group, this would be a closer series right now. We would not be up 2-0.
Yeah, I totally agree. More stuff going on, obviously, in that first period. You had a little bit of a double team where Kane was being held and punched.
Yeah.
Just going up. But I'll tell you what. The Sharks were really disciplined despite their anger. They did not let it completely overcome them, which is great. They used his motivation. Sorensen, who looked like a man possessed.
Man, he was so good last night.
So good. Scores a goal for the Sharks to tie the game up, and it was an excellent goal. And then Loken Couture.
Yeah, that gorgeous goal was something too. And a power play goal, which the Sharks really needed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Second period.
Great pass by LeBanc on that one too, right?
Absolutely.
Especially after it looked like he'd had his brain turned into scrambled eggs on the hit earlier.
And by the way, don't forget that, you know, players like Hurdle had left the bench for, you know, a bit to get checked on. LeBanc had left the ice for a bit to get checked up on. The second period, pretty similar to the first period. I would say tempo maybe slowed just a hair because in the first period, everyone was like at, you know, turned up to like 20 out of 10. Still insanely physical. Still the refs not making a lot of calls. Lots of nice passes by Evander Kane. Lots of nice plays by Tierney and a number of players. Tomáš Hertl with what has to be one of the filthiest goals of the season. Yeah.
There is no player in the NHL who needed to bury that goal more.
Oh yeah, chin all Hurdle. Cut up and everything.
Well, not just that. I mean, Hurdle is if you look at, like, again, I'm going to go analytics egghead for a second here. So where Hurdle takes his shots from and the volume of shots he takes, there is an argument to be made that he should have scored 31 to 35 goals this year. Right. He's just through bad luck or just the goalie's in the right place or he just misses the net. He hasn't, you know, buried the goals he should. And he's not, his shooting percentage is good. It's not bad. Like as forwards go, I think it's even very good. This is the kind of goal, though, that he had been missing most of the time. Right. Or it's gone softly into the goalie. Because if he gets hot and he gets more goals like this during the year, that guy's going to score 40 or 50.
Oh yeah.
he needs it. He needs to get back to that guy who had confidence and took shots like this and drove the net like this, you know, when we saw him before Dustin Brown ruined his knee.
Yeah. So. Right. Well, for those of you who don't play hockey, let me just tell you right now, that is an incredibly hard goal, not just for the stick handling with the player directly on him, but to get that backhanded shot off and put it there, that, and they'll look, make it look so smooth. Like,
but the upside to it though is the goalie has real difficulty on backhanded shots like that too.
Right. Oh, absolutely. So. But that is a hard shot to get off. and he pulls it off. That would make the game 3-1. And now if you're a Sharks fan, you were probably getting really excited. And then, you know, the refs decide to start calling penalties, sort of. And Anaheim scores on the power play.
Well, hold on, because this is exactly what we're talking about, right?
Right.
So the way the refs called the game last night, this and that penalty you're talking about occurred just after Timo Meier had been hauled down and a penalty was not called.
Right.
What always happens in this situation is what happened. Then Evander Kane launched a puck out of the defensive zone and into the stands. And the refs can't not call that.
Right.
And so
I agree. And by the way, that is the I have complained about this for a year. That is the penalty I hate more than any other penalty. It was put in place to solve a non-existent problem.
It's not non-existent.
It's been crappy. There was never a point in time that I could watching hockey where players were intentionally flipping the puck out as a delay of game. That is so rare.
I'm telling you, if there was not a penalty for this, every PK you would see guys launching pucks into the sea.
They weren't.
They would.
They weren't, but they hadn't been. That was the thing. They hadn't been. And then this rule gets instituted.
I would.
And you get game-changing calls there. I'm sure you would. But you also don't have the skill of a lot of these players. Most of the time, when the and even when you look at it now, when that happens, it's never even remotely intentional. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not intentional because it's a penalty.
Well,
to do it. Of course, it's not intentional.
Let me tell you something. The way the Ducks were playing this game, there were a lot of things done with intention that were also...
Yeah, I know. I know. I mean, unintentionally crappy thing about this particular rule is that it's not a judgment call. Like the puck went out, like you can't argue it didn't.
Yeah.
Like if there's not even a stick close to it, you can't argue it was deflected. The refs are put in a position where they can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Right? You could always argue as a ref that you didn't see that elbow. You didn't see that grab. You didn't see whatever. Right. If you're being evaluated by your bosses, you can't argue you didn't see a puck go out of play.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause you're watching the puck. It's what you're supposed to anyway.
Yeah.
It's done.
Well, moving on here. So that makes it a bit of a tight game.
Oh, and by the way, on that power play,
you're not going to let me finish this period.
Well, they score because Burns did what we saw the Anaheim guys do. He went behind the goal line,
right?
When he didn't need to, and he should have probably stayed at the post, and that opened up a spot for the goal to be scored. All right, I'm done. Sorry. Burns.
Thank you, Ben. Third period, heart attack worthy throughout the entire way. I'm only going to mention two plays in particular here. The first is Gibson made an insane save on Tierney. An insane save on Tierney. Like, Tierney has a fourth goal here. If Gibson does not make this basically crazy circus save. And then I want to point out the very end of this game, seemed like a bench miscommunication on whether or not Gibson was being pulled, and he seemed a little irritated by that. The last couple of minutes of this game, when it was a 6-on-5, those were scary. The entire third period, this was a goaltending duel. Gibson made some amazing saves. Jones made some absolutely stellar saves. And I'll tell you what, in both game one and game two, Jones has looked aggressive when he's needed to be. He has looked incredibly serial killer. I don't know if he has a pulse calm. And he looked great. And I'll tell you what, the Ducks had opportunities to come back here, and he shut them down.
I'll say a couple of things about that too. I was worried at the way the end of the second went that the Sharks were going to go into a defensive shell.
Right. Same.
And that would have been a huge, huge mistake against the Ducks. Just letting them kind of come in human wave attacks, flying V, whatever you want to call it, would have been a horrible idea. And I think what I liked about the third period, even though it gave me constant heart attacks, was that actually the Sharks didn't lay off. Like when they gained the zone, they put some shots on net. They attempted to hold possession a little bit, not entirely. About the last 5 minutes, they basically did settle into that that shell, but they were able to counterattack a few times,
right,
and have chances to put this game away. And also, this was the moment where Perry took his stupid penalty,
right,
and gave the Sharks a free 2 minutes where they didn't have to worry too much about Anaheim. Though that power play they put together was the weirdest. like, yeah, let's have Burns and Vlasic.
Yeah.
It's not really a power play. We're just going to hold the puck and see what happens.
Yeah. Not really accomplishing the goal there. No. So yeah, the Sharks win this game. They hold on. It was a very intense, a very scary game at times, both in terms of potential injuries, in terms of the game getting out of hand, in terms of scoring opportunities for both sides. It was fun. I will say I do love the NHL playoffs, although I'm still a little, I still feel my blood flowing even this morning. In fact, it took me a while to get to sleep. But the Sharks are up 2-0.
Yep.
Ben, your 3 stars of this week. And I know they're all going to take place during the Minnesota game. I can just tell.
Yeah, totally. All right. So this is actually tough for me because, again, the folks who scored the goals are not necessarily the guys who contributed the most to the wins, if that makes sense.
Yes,
right?
Totally.
And so, you know, I'd be tempted normally to give Evander Kane first star because, you know, he scored his first 2 playoffs goals. He's been excellent in both games. I mean, he was key to the game 1 win, but on the same token, like Tomáš Hertl actually is the guy who scored the game winning goal in the second game and was amazing in game 1. So like, I kind of don't know what to do here. So, I'm going to give 3 second stars because screw your format. You're not the boss of me.
Nope.
And they're going to go to Kane, Meyer, and Hertl, but you could give it to Jones. You could give it to Sorensen. I mean, there's a lot of folks you could give it to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're just giving everyone a second star.
That's right.
You know, you could have just given the Sharks the first star and you would have been totally.
That would be a cop out.
Totally. But 3 second stars. Not a cop out at all, Ben.
Not a cop out at all. Nope.
This is tough. So I'm actually going to only give 2 stars here. I know. Well, you shut up. You copped out too. I'm going to double cop out as far as you're concerned, because I'm going to give the team my second star because, you know, to your point, Ben, this is a team that's playing together. They're doing things together. They're making the right moves. They're not making a ton of mistakes, which is good. There's been a lot of bait for them to take and they haven't been down on it. There are a lot of guys who are going to be unsung heroes at the end of these playoffs who deserve a lot more credit. It's fun to be on the board. And you mentioned all of those guys. And I am going to give my first star to Martin Jones.
Except for that one shot.
Of course, not because it's... I don't think anyone was expecting that. Not because, you know, he's necessarily done anything above or better a lot of those other players, but you know, we say this every season, a large part of going far in these playoffs is having a goalie heat up at the right time. And I'll tell you what, he is hot right now. And if he can carry that on, you know, hopefully the rest of the team continues this stellar play. And in fact, if anything elevates it, maybe when Jumbo gets back and he's paired with Kane, if he gets paired with Kane, maybe they, you know, explode to a new level we didn't realize they had this season. But either way, regardless of whatever happens, Jones is going to need to be the backbone there for them to be successful. And right now, the way he's playing is solid. And he deserves a lot of credit, especially for the kind of the year that he's had being up and down and dealing with injuries.
Yeah.
Ben, we do have more games here. I know
did you give any other stars? I just heard Jones.
No, 2. It was my second star was the entire Sharks roster.
Oh, gotcha.
Double cop out, Ben.
Wow.
Double cop out, Ben.
Yeah.
I know you and Colin are going to the game on Monday. So game 3 is on Monday, and game 4, both of which are at home, is on Wednesday the 18th. And then it's pretty much every other day from there if needed.
Yeah.
Now I do want to answer one question real quick before we get off of the podcast, because listener Jacob asked, and I apologize for everyone who's been writing. We haven't paying attention. As you can see, Ben has been writing back, but we knew we would touch on some of these things. He wanted to know, you know, for fun, how do you guys think we match up against Vegas and Nashville right now? Ben, I mean, I already kind of gave my thoughts on this. Where's your head?
Yeah. So I think the Sharks clearly are the better team against Anaheim at this point for depth reasons. Barring an injury. So I think the Sharks will finish this out. Is it going to be a sweep? No. I think I actually am incredibly concerned that game three is going to be a blowout the other way.
Mainly because you're going to be there and that's just your luck.
I am going to be there. And the last two playoff games I went to have been not just Sharks losses, but have ended series. So ended the Edmonton series and ended the Penguins series. So that's a bummer.
The Penguins being the Stanley Cup one that you
caused the loss. I got to watch the Penguins get the cup. That was great. For very low values of great. But the two playoff games I'd gone previous to that were both wins. So there you go. Anyway, regardless, I think the Sharks match up just too well with against Anaheim and will just continue to abuse their bottom six and continue to abuse their AHL defenders. And I do include Bieksa and Beauchemin in the description of AHL defenders. Mm-hmm. With Vegas is not going to play the same type of game that Anaheim.
No, definitely
not. They're not going to try to pummel the Sharks into submission. It's going to instead be skill versus skill, speed versus speed.
Right.
And so I do think the Sharks match up evenly with Vegas, meaning that one is a legitimate coin flip.
Yeah.
So then the question is if the Sharks can get past Vegas, and they can. I think even with, you know, we saw that when Kane was here and the Sharks were healthy, that with this constructed team, and whether it's Sorensen or Goodrow on the fourth line, almost doesn't matter. Maybe Carlson should sit and Goodrow should get to play, because I feel like Carlson is the weak link actually on that fourth line right now. Mm-hmm. The Sharks can and probably will beat Vegas. I'll say it in seven. They just got way more experience, let's just say. I actually think that matters in that case. They won't have home ice. That doesn't matter to the Sharks, whatever. So Nashville, I hope that Jumbo does not try to come back until he is 90 to 95%. And to me, there's no way that occurs before another series is done personally. So if Jumbo comes back as healthy as he can be for that Nashville series, then I do think the Sharks actually match up pretty well with Nashville at that point. It's still skill versus skill. It's still a coin flip. But the Sharks are as good as that team. And I'll say the same about Winnipeg, if it's Winnipeg that gets past Nashville, because they can. But if Jumbo's not healthy and he's not ready to go, then the Sharks are at a disadvantage in that series.
Yeah, you basically feel like they need another star player to come in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they need to push Meyer. They need a player who's good enough to push not just Meyer, but Bodker down the lineup to create additional mismatches. Again, think about the possibility of this team fully healthy with Meyer next to Fair and, let's say, Sorensen, the way he's playing.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
That team is as dangerous as any team in the league, period. I think.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah, but we don't know. I mean, Jumbo's health is a huge variable, huge variable.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a great podcast, Ben. I miss Colin for sure. He will be back. He is in town. He just forgot to bring mic equipment.
Yeah.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Please do, and pass it around. By the way, we work really hard to try to make this both informative and entertaining. And I'm sure we fail at both, but tell your friends. You can subscribe to it on Android platforms as well. You can find us on the web at circlingthecup.com. You can hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. And of course, you can tweet at us, Ben.
Basically at me.
Yeah, at Circling the Cup. Although sometimes he just takes things from our conversations, I'll have you know. Very rarely, though. That's it, Ben. Here's hoping that you guys get to have a good time at the tank.
I hope so too.
Close out the series before our next podcast.
I'll be tweeting from the tank on Monday night for sure. And if you're around, feel free to say hi. We're gonna be up in the nosebleeds in a corner, but there's no bad seat in the tank, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and you know what the best part is? Are you in the back row? That means you can lean forward.
No, not fully in the back, unfortunately.
No one will yell at you, Ben.
Yeah. No, I usually end up yelling at people who lean forward because I'm an old man like that. So
yeah, you're a traditionalist in the Sharks fandom. That concludes the podcast, Ben. Say bye-bye.
Go Sharks.
Go Sharks. Bye-bye.